This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Of course, losing the presidency was a crushing blow for Democrats, but some say the party's bigger disaster was down ticket at statehouses around the country. Democrats are in their weakest position in almost a century. Soon, they'll control just one-third of the nation's legislative bodies, and the party will have just 15 governors. These trends were reflected in New Hampshire, where after almost 15 years of shared power, Republicans now control the governor's office, the state house, and the state senate. And that could spell trouble for the party's future, as these local political jobs are often a training ground for the next generation of leaders. Today in The Exchange, do Democrats have a talent pipeline problem? Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests for the hour. Gene Martin is here, treasurer for the New Hampshire Young Democrats. He's also executive director of the New Hampshire Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, and he worked in the New Hampshire State Senate as minority caucus director. And Gene, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Senator Betty Lasky. She's a Democrat from Nashua and secretary of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. She's also served in the House and in a variety of local positions in Nashua. And Senator Lasky, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Also with us, Steve Marchand, former mayor of Portsmouth, Democratic gubernatorial candidate this last go-round, and Steve has served on the Portsmouth City Council. And Steve Marchand, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And also with us, Senator Donna Soucy. She's a Democrat from Manchester. She also served in the House and was an alderman and school board member in the Queen City. And Senator Soucy, welcome back to you, too.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and Senator Soucy, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody, obviously. Never mind the presidential election for the moment. Why all the losses at the legislative level?
Well, I think there's a difference between what happened nationally and in other states than here in New Hampshire. I think New Hampshire was actually a bright light in many regards. Although we didn't win the governor's office, we actually gained seats in the House, remained the same in the state Senate. And I think that's testament to the fact that we had great candidates and that we actually do have a strong team of Democratic candidates who work together and were able to make those gains, certainly in the House, and come up close once again in the state Senate.
Well, and a month or so before the election, Senator Soucy, as you know, a lot of people were saying, hey, the state Senate could flip back to Democratic control. That was the hope, and it didn't happen.
That's true. And I think there are always different reasons. One, certainly in 2010, when there was a sweep and Republican control in both the House and Senate, was the opportunity to redraw the district lines and redistrict the state of New Hampshire. That continues, I think, to be an issue, the way some of those districts are drawn. They're drawn purposefully to provide advantage to Republicans. But despite that, we definitely had excellent candidates this time around and were very competitive. I mean, we won 10 seats. The 11th was decided in a recount, very, very close margin. It ended up being about 16 votes. So I think New Hampshire Democrats actually ran strong campaigns for the legislative session.
Senator Lasky, what do you think?
In Nashua, we did very well. Democrats did very well. We picked up seats in the state legislature. I retained my Senate seat while we lost the district next to me. That's one of those seats that Senator Soucy alluded to that had been gerrymandered extremely tough for a Democrat to win. But overall, we had great candidates. We had great state rep candidates who were, you alluded to, the aging of our candidates. They were young candidates, first-time candidates. And we remained control of 18 of our seats out of 27. And again, elected Secretary Clinton and all the other Democrats that did win.
Well, and since you mentioned, you know, the aging is a concern of some of the candidates, let's turn to Jean Martin again, not just treasurer for New Hampshire Young Democrats, but also executive director of the Legislative Campaign Committee for the party. So what do you think, Jean, these big losses at the state house level, not so much here in New Hampshire, although Republicans now control everything, but also across the country, you really see Democrats in a very weak position.
You know, I think we have to look at, you know, exactly like Senator Susi said, in after 2010, what happened with redistricting. You know, when we look at, for example, Senate District 12 with Peggy Gilmore, if you look at that district, she lost by about 300 votes in 2014. If it had the old configuration, she would have won by about 1,000. Same thing this time. You know, when you look at what the Republicans were able to do, if you look at Senator Flora Clark's Senate district, you have Durham, Portsmouth, Lee, Madbury, Newfields, Newmarket. They basically, Republicans took pretty ingeniously, I think, too. I'll give them credit for what they did. But they took about four Senate districts and they took all the most Democratic parts of every district and they put into one district. And we look at that, you know, Senator Flora Clark wins by over 11,000 votes because they've been able to, you know, take off the most Democratic parts. But when you look at the state house with 174 Democrats, it's the largest minority Democrats have ever had. You know, when we look at the state Senate, although we did lose Senator Hosmer, we elected actually my old high school civics teacher, Scott McGilvery, the first Democrat ever elected in District 16. In that district, you know, no surprise, was kept over. Republicans didn't change it from when the court redistricted. So we were able to win that. But when we look at some of these other, you know, districts, you know, it's tough. You know, even with a really strong Democratic Party, redistricting, as we've seen, really has been able to hold Democrats back from taking the legislature.
Well, and I've heard other Democrats say what you all have said, that this redistricting that happened in 2010 made an impact that won't happen again until 2020. And we'll talk about that later. But is it just that, Jean? I mean, really, is that the only factor that led to Democrats losing control of all three, the trifecta?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to the governor's race, and I think Steve will be able to talk about that, you know, I think the biggest fault was that there was no oxygen in that race. You know, I worked for Hillary Clinton during the presidential primary, and for 10 months from, you know, the time she announced in April to February, that was it. You know, I don't remember if Steve had announced yet, but I know I believe Colin had and I think Mark had. And really, there was no oxygen. You know, when you look at that, the Hillary-Bernie primary continued to go on after New Hampshire, and I think folks, you know, really weren't focused on that. And when you look at it, people know Maggie Hassan, people know Annie Cusser, Carol Shea Porter, Hillary Clinton, and I think people didn't get a chance to know our Democratic nominee. And I think if that had happened and he had had the exposure, you know, he would have won.
Well, and in a minute, I want to ask all of you, okay, so we see these legislative losses, we see these gubernatorial losses for the party here and nationally. What do you do about that? But Steve, to you first, just your thoughts on why here in New Hampshire or nationally, we do see Democrats in a very weak position at the state house level.
Well, first, a quick add-on to what you've heard already. Yes, the reason why Democrats don't have control of at least one of the House, the Senate, and the governorship is because of redistricting. If you had it done, say, the way many states like Iowa that do a nonpartisan group that determine it every 10 years, and you did it based on maximizing the number of competitive districts, which I think most of us would agree is a far superior way than letting politicians handle it, the numbers don't lie. Democrats would almost certainly have won control narrowly of the Senate and may well have narrowly gained control of the state house. Something that I've been saying for a number of years now is I think the state of New Hampshire is actually bluer in terms of the values, civil liberties, inclusive policies, fiscal responsibility, than the redistricting masks. So that is not an excuse for why we shouldn't strive to do better. Anybody should always be striving to do better. But that's reality. This would not be complete Republican control if you didn't have the 2010 redistricting going on. So I think that's important and it can be quantified. But in terms of the noise that Jean mentioned, really tough at the governor's level. Remember, Democrats won the presidential four electoral votes, won the U.S. Senate race. We're the only state in America that flipped a U.S. Senate seat and a congressional seat. Remember, Frank Ginta was the incumbent. We act like he was the challenger because of his problems. Carroll was the challenger. So we flipped it. Only state in America that can say that. So that is not to say that there aren't challenges. But New Hampshire probably had as good a night, maybe Nevada as well, as any state in the country in what was obviously dominated by the election of Donald Trump as president.
Well, that's what makes partly this story so interesting, not just the national picture that you see, where, again, you know, huge losses over the last couple years for Democrats at the statehouse level. But also, as you said, Steve Marchand, in terms of congressional elections, New Hampshire Democrats did very well. So you would think, looking at Jean Shaheen, you know, and McLean Custer, you know, the whole delegation is Democratic. Why didn't that trickle down to the statehouse level?
Well, because you can't redistrict statewide elections. And because in a two congressional seat state, because we're a small state, it is very hard to gerrymander congressional districts in a small state. So when you give us a fair crack at it, we'll take our shot against the Republican Party in these elections. And in those places, take executive council, which we have not mentioned. It is a 3-2 Republican majority. I would say in the 15 or so years I've been involved, this was the strongest five-pack of Democratic candidates I've ever seen, won all five districts. The number one reason why Democrats don't have at least three of those five seats is because of massive redistricting. The district that we're sitting in this morning, Concord, is an amazing feat.
It involves looks like a worm.
It looks like a worm. It looks like a worm that's got a lot of problems. It is twisted quite a bit. It involves Keene. It involves Concord. It involves Rochester. It takes virtually every Democratic community. I believe it involves Durham as well.
Throws it into one district.
It's quite a feat. Hard to do. And if you took Beth Roth in the southeastern part of the state, if you took Dan Weeks in the southwestern part of the state, those seats would have been we'd be still counting votes if you drew those up in a more equitable fashion.
Senator Lasky, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, prior to 2010 and redistricting, we had Democratic executive counselors forever because the district went from Nashua west. In that 2010 redistricting, they flipped it. So it went clearly more Republican from Nashua east through Hudson, Salem, et cetera.
Okay, I'm going to set aside the redistricting for the moment, okay, because this is the map that you're stuck with for the next
right.
4 years. So maybe to you first, Senator Susie, what do state-level Democrats like you need to do? What do you plan to do to turn this around?
Well, I think a couple things. It's important to note that in 2018, we won't have a presidential race. We won't have a U.S. Senate race. So the governor's race will be front and center, foremost. People will, from the time candidates announce, begin to get to know the candidates a little better. I do completely agree with what Jean Martin said. There wasn't an opportunity to get to know those gubernatorial candidates between the presidential and the U.S. Senate race and all the media around those. It really drowned out the candidates running for governor. In terms of the legislative races, I think we will once again recruit a strong field of candidates. I think many of our amazing candidates who came up a little short this time will be running again. I think we will once again have the support of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. Chairman Buckley did an amazing job this last time. I mean, we had 27 regional offices. There was a true coordinated effort with all of our top-of-the-ticket candidates, but with legislative candidates as well. And I think continuing that in 2018. And also from, you know, this day forward, I wish the governor well because I wish the state of New Hampshire well. But he's said a couple things already that I think are a bit troubling. And we're going to have to keep a spotlight on his decisions, his activities, and ensure that where we contrast with his opinions, we're very vocal about that from the outset.
Let me invite our listeners to join us, and then I want to hear from everybody on that question of, okay, here's the map you're dealt with. Here's what you've got for the next 4 years anyway. What do you do with it? The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We'd love to hear from you. The number again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're focusing more down ballot for state Democrats. Here in New Hampshire and around the country, Democrats are in a very weak position, holding on to about a third of state houses and just 15 governorships. Nationwide. 1-800-892-6477 again is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Jean, how about to you next? So here's what you've got. What do you do with it?
Well, I think we need to keep recruiting and fielding strong candidates. I think, you know, when we look at Scott McGillivray, you know, he was a longtime teacher, coach, you know, in Hooksett, the town he's from, a Republican town. He lost by about 300 votes, you know, and I think that's pretty good for a Democrat in Hooksett. So, you know, looking at people who are like that, someone like a Tom Sherman, you know, who again, had a really narrow margin, someone like a Peg Gilmore. So it's first, exactly like Senator Susie said, fielding strong candidates for office. And then again, running, you know, grassroots campaign. I think without the spotlight of a presidential race or a U.S. Senate race, we're going to be able to focus on state legislative races, and that's going to be the narrative. You know, I think people forget, even in 2012, we talked more about Bill O'Brien and all the things that Republicans did in the legislature than we did about Barack Obama. And I think, you know, that was really important because it helped show what happened. I think if, you know, Governor-elect Sununu wants to sort of, you know, really take a hatchet to this budget, you know, wants to, you know, end same-day voter registration, all these things that I think your average New Hampshire voter would say, you know, I don't agree with that. You know, I think the Democrats are going to have a strong case to say, you know, he'll be a first, you know, single-term governor, and then we'll be able to take back the legislature.
Well, conventional wisdom, and as we've seen, conventional wisdom is often wrong, but conventional wisdom, Gene, says that midterm years are bad for Democrats because, you know, they Democratic voters, younger voters, minority voters tend to turn out in presidential years, not in those midterms. So
well, I think, you know, 2006 was one of the best years, you know, in the history, you know, the state for Democrats. You know, I think when we look at what's going to happen, I think the larger trend is that we're going to have a President Trump who I think is really going to be a lightning rod for criticism. And I think we're going to see a backlash. We look at, you know, every president except for maybe George W. Bush saw a loss of seats in their first term. Obviously, President Clinton in the 94, you know, election. I mean, even Barack Obama, obviously, 2010. So I think we're going to have that focus for us. But again, you know, with the spotlight solely on you know, races here in New Hampshire, I think Democrats are going to be able to succeed with that.
Well, and Steve, some of the people that Gene mentioned have been around the block a couple times. I wonder what efforts you see ongoing to recruit younger people so that you've got that talent pipeline going.
Yeah, well, you know, depending, the older I get, the older young is. You know? And as a 42-year-old in politics, you know, you can be in your 30s and even 40s and just be getting started. We only have one statewide election on the ballot in 2018 in New Hampshire. It's governor. And that means that it'll be the opposite scenario. Rather than the governor getting swamped out by these big federal national elections, sexy elections, we're the only game in town in 2018 in New Hampshire in terms of a governor's race, right? That's the only one. So it means that whatever the thematics are at the top in that statewide race will have massive impact on the state Senate, the state House, executive council. It can set the tone. So I think that in 2018, as Democrats, we need to be very proactive. And I think this is true at the national level as well. Democrats need to be sure to articulate what we are for rather than simply trying to disqualify Republicans from office. And the more specific you get, the more aspirational you get, and the more that you focus on building credibility on the power of government to be able to do good things that improve people's lives, but be highly credible in the way you do it. That's going to build the kind of confidence that obviously is lacking. I think that's a big part of the reason President-elect Trump won is because folks are so despondent about government seeming inability to do things the way they want that they throw their arms up and decide to go in a very different direction from what we traditionally have done.
So as a supporter of Bernie Sanders in the presidential race, Steve, do you think the party needs to embrace so-called liberal politics more firmly to pull in those younger voters or what?
Yeah, well, look, I did support Bernie. There were two reasons. One is I think that he understood some of the anxiety in the working class in particular, which I think was borne out in the general election by what voters said. The second is I found him a unique figure in terms of authenticity. If you listen to him in 1985 and 2016, it was the same guy. And I think that that's a very attractive thing at a time when people are highly cynical about their politics. What it means for 2018, I think it's socially liberal. I think it's highly inclusive, highly entrepreneurial, but still values fiscal responsibility. But it's going to be something that's more innovative and younger and dynamic in terms of what folks will be looking for in 2018 and beyond.
All right. After a short break, we will hear from you. So give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, state Democrats take stock and look ahead. For the first time in 14 years, New Hampshire Democrats lost the governorship to Republicans, who also held on to the legislature. And these trends are playing out at state houses around the country, with Democrats now controlling the smallest number of legislatures ever. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. These losses at the local level have led to this question: do Democrats have a talent pipeline problem, or were they just unlucky this time around? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR. Exchange. And just before the break, all of you, I was asking Steve Marchand whether next time around Democrats need to adopt a more progressive, liberal, call it what you will, message, such as Bernie Sanders adopted. And Senator Lasky, I wonder what you think about that.
Well, you know, I think that the message that Democrats have had has been one that has definitely resounded in the state of New Hampshire. We, in my time in politics, we've become increasingly more blue than we were back in the day. But I think what hurt us, particularly at the local level and I guess nationally, was the fact of economics. When you hit people in the pocketbook and they think that their jobs are at stake or they have not been working, that's what's going to motivate them. And I think the Republicans rode that message. And as much as many said they didn't like Donald Trump, I think they liked the fact that he was speaking as an outsider.
Well, here's an email to that effect from Chris in Berlin, who says, once the DNC was found to be tipping the scales against Sanders, some Democrats could not support Hillary, the perceived candidate being shoved down their throats by the party, as Chris says. He says this must have contributed to affect down ballot races. He says many Rust Belt counties that went strongly for Bernie in the primary did not go for Hillary later in the general. I think hardworking people won't support the political party elite dictating or even cheating for who should be elected. Chris, thank you for the email. And Donna Soucy, what do you think about this issue that that Democrats should have, you know, should adopt a more Bernie-esque message going forward?
Well, I think, you know, we certainly had a very vigorous primary here in New Hampshire and for many states going forward between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And I do think that Senator Sanders was able to make a significant mark and contribution to the party and to our candidates in our party platform, really pushing harder on some of those economic messages. Although Hillary Clinton was talking about them, I think Bernie was talking about them in greater detail and a little more often. And I do think that those economic messages, although they didn't resound in some of those same counties in the same way, were embraced by the Democratic Party.
You know, it's interesting, Gene, in the past, and again, we're seeing that past trends, conventional wisdom, call it what you will, seems to be turned on its head this time around. In the past, Democrats who were successful were those more moderate Democrats, you know, John Lynch and Gene Shaheen and Maggie Hassan. So I wonder what you think about this call by some to adopt a more liberal attitude.
Well, first, let me just finish off what Senator Soucy was talking about. I think it's important to remember, and I think Democrats need to say this often, Hillary Clinton got more votes than any other person not named Barack Obama in the history of the nation ever. So, you know, if we take Barack Obama aside, she got more votes. Obviously, the popular vote doesn't decide the election, but I think it's important to remember that if you add up all the races for Senate, U.S. Senate, Republican, Democrat, Democrats won more raw votes. Same thing in the House, yet obviously we didn't get that result. So I think it's important that Democrats remember that. So when I hear, you know, a message didn't work or this, I think it's important to remember that she, you know, it's likely that she's going to get up to 65 million, you know, votes. And so obviously people respond to that and they voted for her. You know, so I think that's important. But back to the state level, in terms of, you know, John Lynch, I think that Senator Shaheen, then Governor, you know, Shaheen really laid the foundation of how to be successful in New Hampshire. You know, when we look at her, you know, I think it's not surprising that, you know, she really cracked the code, you know, after about, I think, 30-something years of, you know, not having a Democratic governor. We had Gene Shaheen, you know, a really historic victory in 1996. And then we saw John Lynch, Maggie Hassan. And I think, you know, we know that candidates who are running in New Hampshire, you know, really have to have that moderate streak for success. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, what happened when folks, you know, were not in that mold. You know, but I think in terms of going forward, we have to make sure that we're, you know, reaching out to Republicans and Democrats. I mean, the reason why I think Maggie Hassan, Gene Shaheen and Lynch were so successful is that they were very bipartisan, you know, governors. You know, and that's, and if you look at the race for U.S. Senate, you know, Maggie Hassan talked about, you know, passing paycheck equity in a bipartisan manner. So, you know, I think that's really the key to success in New Hampshire.
Let's go to our listeners. Chris, thank you again for that email. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Mike joins us from Concord. Hi, Mike. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. You know, I do think that the Democrats need to take a more liberal stance. I think that a lot of people younger than me, especially, are kind of just disgruntled and don't vote. I voted Democrat down ticket, but I didn't like any of my candidates. They weren't the people I wanted to primary. And I think that like people like Maggie Hassan has gotten just the kind of basic Democratic vote, but she doesn't stand for anything like legalized marijuana or anything that a lot of the liberal citizens do want in this state. And she won't. So I kind of feel like,
okay, Mike, I'm so sorry, but your phone's really crackling out there. But I think I hear your basic message, which is you want to see Democrats at the Statehouse adopt these more liberal positions. Go ahead, Steve Marchand.
Look, I was fortunate. I got to run for governor this year as a last-minute guy with no money and was really pleased on how it went for first time out of the box. And a big part of it is thousands of people that were not terribly fired up for any number of reasons, perhaps the callers listing out a few of them. The next generation for Democrats at the state level and nationally have to be, I think, bigger and bolder, both rhetorically and in the big ideas. It doesn't mean that you have to give up fiscal responsibility. Indeed, the only way to get big things done is by being fiscally responsible. But folks want to know, you know, it's paid family leave, it's legalization of marijuana, it's abolition of the death penalty, it's making college more affordable in meaningful ways that you can quantify. I cannot say this enough. One lesson of 2016 to me is that folks don't believe government can do things well. We have to bend over backwards if we want government to play a meaningful role, to show it, to do the math, and to do it every day.
Senator Lasky, did you want to jump in too?
Well,
on our caller's point.
Yeah, I think that basically, and the Democrats, I've served in the legislature for a long time overall, and I think most of the Democrats that I've known in the House and the Senate are very socially liberal. I don't think any of that has changed. We've tried to repeal the death penalty. We're clearly for family leave. We passed same-sex marriage. That was a Democrat initiative. And so I think that maybe we need to make our message stronger to young people and people who think that we are moderate leaning to conservative even. I'm not quite sure.
Is it possible that despite, you know, what Steve said and what our caller Mike says, that more New Hampshire people don't like that progressive message? They would rather go back to, you know, to those more conservative values that Republicans espoused, including Chris Sununu, who was quite successful in the gubernatorial race.
I think I see my, you know, friend Steve shaking his head.
Opposite.
But not where you live vis-a-vis where I live, Manchester, Nashua. People are slow to take on change. And I think we are still, in that sense, what I might call the old New Hampshire, in that they're not quite ready for a real progressive message.
I'll tell you, one of the most enjoyable parts of the process is the number of signs I would get, all in the last few weeks, because I, again, started late, was not in a position on day one to win, from folks that had Gary Johnson signs and Steve Marchand lawn signs. And it wasn't because Gary Johnson and I agree on everything, but on a handful of issues, it is not a straight line, conservative to liberal. It is a circle. And some of the most conservative people are civil libertarians who would share very similar views with liberal Democrats in New Hampshire on civil liberties, on expansion of freedoms, on inclusivity of policy, and on treating everybody equally.
Well, we have a ton of listeners who want to jump in, so let's go back to them. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at a very disappointing year for Democrats at the state house level here in New Hampshire and around the country. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. And from Manchester, Jonathan is on the air. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I'm glad to hear Steve Marchand talk about this, because it seems that the standard pundits and the standard bearer DNC members in the state all think that the blue dog path is the way to winning the election in the future rounds. And I just don't see that as being the case. Let's face it, the primaries, Bernie swept the state more than either major party supposed standard bearer. And I think you're going to leave the young people behind. The millennials didn't come out for the general election here in the state. I don't think Colin Van Ostrand appealed to them or even tried to bring on those younger progressives in the way that that Bernie really successfully did. And I just feel that the problem is they're going to go very conservative, and even Jean Shaheen is going to see resistance from the young, politically active people in this state this next round. They're not really ready for it. They don't believe that they're going to have any resistance, but young people don't like her stance on the TPP. They weren't even happy with Maggie's stance on marijuana in the state. There's a lot of stands where there's not even a real Democrat fighting for minimum wage in the state in a major way.
Well, Jonathan, let's pick up on this. And Senator Susie saying, whoa, wait a minute on the minimum wage. But to your point, Jonathan, about younger people who may be wondering if they want to go with Democrats or not. Gene Martin, as I said, you're treasurer for New Hampshire Young Democrats. So what do you think about Jonathan's point?
You know, Jonathan, I appreciate the call. You know, when I look at young people, you know, we haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen any evidence that young people en masse didn't show up. I mean, I think when we look at the people who, you know, did vote, I'll use my brother who's 19, first time he voted was for Bernie Sanders in the primary. I worked for Hillary Clinton at the time, so I was sad I couldn't get that vote. You know, but he, you know, we talked a lot about it. And, you know, when I called him a few days before the election, so I said, you know, Trevor, are you going to go and vote? He said, absolutely. You know, we have to vote, you know, against, you know, Donald Trump. And he's like, you know, I'm going to vote, you know, Democrat all the way. I think that's really important, you know. And so I think when we look at that, I mean, you know, we always have a bruising primary. You know, it was really tough. You know, I supported Hillary in 2007 when I was a college student. It was tough to see, you know, Barack Obama beat her. But, you know, we all come together at the end. But I do think that we have to continue to engage, you know, young people. I mean, we did that with the Young Democrats. You know, we have a program called 603 Forward that recruits, highlights, and supports young people for office. You know, we have about, you know, 15, you know, folks that are elected that are under the age of 36 are really excited about that. And so, you know, we're, you know, as the Young Democrats, we're building and supporting those candidates because we think it's important to continue to build that pipeline.
You know, again, usually you think young people come out in presidential years and they tend to sit out the off years and the midterm years. So what happened this time with young people coming out to vote, Gene?
Well, I think people are pushing this premise. I haven't seen any evidence to say that young people haven't, didn't come out. I mean, I think when we looked at, you know, college campuses, we saw, you know, people who are residents, you know, of New Hampshire, you know, who are domiciled here, you know, did vote. I mean, we saw a larger turnout in Durham and in Hanover and the other communities than we've ever seen before. So, you know, to me, I don't see there's evidence that students didn't come out. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, I think that's part of the narrative, but I just don't see any evidence of that.
I can see you want to jump in, Senator Susie.
Just one thing. The caller's last statement, obviously, as someone who has sponsored a minimum wage increase every year that I've served in the state Senate, was troubling. But I think what it speaks to is that millennials, younger people, get their information very differently. The traditional sources of news, somebody actually getting a physical newspaper delivered to their door every day, just isn't happening anymore. And perhaps the issue with millennials is not that Democrats aren't doing things that they believe in, but that they aren't getting the message that through Facebook or through Snapchat or through Tumblr, whatever means of communication they're using, they're not seeing the messages that they want. And perhaps then the onus is on us to be more effective in using different means of communication to get that out there and reassure them that we are fighting for the things they care most about.
Right. That's the follow-up question then, Steve Marchand, I'll throw it to you. So, okay, if that's the case, what do you do about it?
Well, there certainly is an element of that, and it does mean that it is democratizing in some ways the way folks campaign. it can, if done well, actually lower the cost of campaigning because you can communicate to folks, but it requires more creative, and it means you have to break out in a way. You have to be bolder. You have to be stronger. You have to be, I don't want to say provocative for being provocative's sake, but folks are looking for authenticity, and they're looking for throwing the hammer down. If you have done the homework and you believe in something, say it. And it means that for younger folks, I could tell you from firsthand going around the state, it is not a classic ideological set of boxes here. It is socially very liberal. It is socially very inclusive. And it is fiercely pro-entrepreneur. And that is not a neat Democrat-Republican box the way we've defined it over the last 30 or 40 years.
So, again, the recipe for success in the past has been for Democrats, careful, cautious, moderate. You're saying chuck that aside?
Be extremely thoughtful and do your homework. And once you've made a decision, show your homework and be bold. And it means, and be willing to be surprised sometimes at the mix of ideological positions. And that's what represents folks 40 and under.
I have a bunch of emails here that I want to share with all of you. And here's Joey in Manchester who says, I'm hearing a lot of hand-wringing and blaming of the system. And while I don't doubt the gerrymandering effect, I think the Democratic Party is missing the big picture. What won this election for Republicans was the appeal to the working class. The Democratic Party has lately been seen as the party of the elite and educated, and anyone who is not, quote, enlightened is not worthy and seen as, quote, less than. Joey says, those are the people who turned to Trump this election. Those are the people who need to be reached out to in the future. Joey, thank you so much for the email. And Senator Lasky, what do you think?
You know, that this astounds me. I believe with the writer of that email, and I agree with him. And the fact, though, that the Democratic Party has always been the party of the working class. And this election, it flipped. I mean, I saw union people vote for Trump, things that had not happened in, you know, before. So I do think we have to make our message stronger in the fact that I'm waiting to see if President-elect Trump will do anything for all these people that do think he's going to create jobs, et cetera.
So at the state level, you know, those working class folks that you said who feel like, you know, Democrats are the elite and don't look down on them. So they vote for Trump. That's what you're saying. But why don't they go further down the ballot and say, you know, I really like that Donna Susie or that Betty Lasky?
That is a phenomenon that we have clearly been working on over the years. We have a slogan that says bottoms up, you know, top down, so that you don't forget. That is just, and I've done a lot of recounts, and for whatever reason, people do think that, you know, the top of the ballot, the national candidates are the only ones, and sometimes it's the only ones they do hear about and know about. But it's your state representatives and your state senators and your local government that affects you more than any, you know, any of the national candidates on a day-to-day basis. So people need to pay more attention to their reps. And I think over the years that has happened, but it's a continual fight. And you're right, we do have to be better at it.
Well, and again, today in The Exchange, we're talking to a panel of Democrats about the state of their party, especially at the state level here and around the country. Now, 4 years ago, we did this with Republicans after they lost the presidency. And we pulled them in and said, hey, what do you think happened? And they talked about that. So tables are turned. Now we're talking to you guys and what happened to you at the state level and what you do about what some call a talent pool problem. We'll focus in more on that in just a minute. You can give us a call to The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with state Democrats taking stock of losses at state houses around the country, including here in New Hampshire. Come January, Democrats will hold just 15 governorships and the smallest number of legislatures ever. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. A couple more emails I'd like to share with all of you. Here's Megan Grantham who says, how does redistricting happen exactly? Why 10 years between instances? And why did Democrats allow it to happen? Meg, thank you so much. And Senator Susie, go ahead.
So every 10 years, the U.S. government does a census account of all of the individuals. And once those results are completed, the state legislature then sets about looking at the state map and drawing individual districts for our state House members, state Senate districts, and council and the congressional districts as well. What happened was that the Republicans in 2010, at the time that the census was being conducted, seized control of both bodies of the legislature. So therefore, they were in a position to actually draw those maps and make the difference for themselves and give advantage to their candidates.
And is that how it happens in most states, Senator Susie?
No. As Steve Marchand said earlier, a lot of other states have adopted a commission, a redistricting commission that's nonpartisan that really focuses more on numbers and the demographics and looks beyond just the sheer partisan politics and advantage to one party versus another, but looks at, you know, communities of interest and different geographical representations.
Are there models out there that any of you have heard of that you think would work for New Hampshire in terms of changing the redistricting? And by the way, what are the chances that that would change given now that Republicans control both bodies of the legislature and the governor's office?
A couple of things. I think there are about 12 states that do a very straight by the numbers. It all depends what your priority is. If your priority is to maximize the number of competitive districts, which is a very worthy goal, then having a nonpartisan panel that does it in a very public way. Iowa is often held up as one of the best in the country, and it is not coincidental that they have some of the most competitive congressional districts in the country, have narrowly divided state House and state Senate many years. That is a result of a lot of people saying, hey, my vote matters at the state Senate, state House level, because this one's going to be a nail biter as well, because it's going to be competitive. Keep in mind, Democrats have a great track record in this genre. In 2006, when we won back the New Hampshire House in the first time in forever, we had said for years we'd get rid of straight ticket voting where you check the top for R or D and then you didn't even have to bother with the rest. No reward for being a thoughtful candidate down ballot that maybe could get you to switch over. We said we'd do it, even though it would have been advantageous for Democrats at that point to keep straight ticket because we were doing so well then. We said we'd do it, and we did it, and we got rid of straight ticket voting. It improved the process, further democratized it. I'm confident that if and when Democrats get it back in the near future, we would do the same thing to eliminate this problem, which is redistricting.
Well, the headline nationally, again, when it comes to this state house story, is Democrats are in their weakest position in almost a century. And, you know, national Democrats are worried about what they call the talent pool pipeline. And, Gene, I'll turn to you first. How robust do you think efforts are here in New Hampshire, since this is the ground that you're playing on? How robust are efforts to keep that talent pipeline going, given that you don't have that that training ground of local Democratic office holders?
Well, we actually have a great when we look at the pipeline, I mean, we talk about people like Councillor Chris Pappas, who's a good friend, who I think would be a fantastic governor. Great business owner in the Purinan back room, best chicken tenders, in the nation there.
That's a pretty big statement, but
we talk about, I think Steve Marchand, Stephanie Shaheen, Senator Susie, when we talk about people who are, under, 50, Dan Feltis, those are the sort of folks. So, we're excited. Obviously, we're blessed to have the first I think we touched on it earlier, but the first all-female, all-Democratic congressional district. And my guess is those folks are going to stick around, for a while. But, when we look at the state level, whether executive council, state Senate, local level, we really do have a large pool of candidates. And I think, we're going to continue to build that. And as folks, retire or, no longer run again or decide to do something else, we're going to have folks that are going to be able to come up, and take those positions.
What about the idea, there's this traditional idea of people serve on the, the school board or the board of aldermen or they serve as mayor, and that's the talent pool pipeline. This year, though, here we have Donald Trump, businessman, never held political office. How much do you think, Gene, Democrats need to reach out to unconventional people, like business people, like people in other walks of life who haven't tasted politics before? Is that part of the problem? These people seem sort of insidery.
I think there's something, I think the problem you know, with Donald Trump, I think if folks were able to hold him accountable, if we were to see tax returns, if, you know, I think, you know, it's great the New York Times, you know, did this whole segment on how he has conflicts all across the country. It'd been great to see that 2 months ago. You know, but I think when we look at candidates, you know, I like to see, you know, if someone served, you know, as a mayor or, you know, a county treasurer or an alderman, you know, I think that's really important to sort of, you know, get that experience to be able to go and serve in office, because it's a, you know, difficult thing. Having worked in the state Senate, obviously never elected to anything, but having worked state Senate, people who serve on more local boards, it's a different experience to be able to come and actually solve problems. Because on your local aldermanic board, you know, it's really not a partisan issue. It's, you know, how do we fix these potholes? How do we fund this? You know, how do we add more, you know, cops on the beat? I think those are really important. So I think those experiences are good. And I think we have a large pool of folks in the Democratic Party here in New Hampshire.
Well, I'd like to ask our two senators about this, because Senator Lasky, you know, in addition to your work at the state level, boy, you were on the city planning board, the board of selectmen, vice chair of the Nashua Democratic City Committee. Senator Susie, in addition to your work in the state Senate, alderman, school board member. So what do you think? You first, Senator Lasky.
Well,
how much bubbling up from the grassroots do you see?
I see a lot of it. And although, you know, sometimes it's very difficult for people working 9 to 5 every day to take on these evening positions or what have you in their local governments. But I have to say that my training ground as planning board member and ultimately chair served me better to serve in the state house than anything I had done. I had to bring sides together. I had to reach a consensus and hopefully try to have everyone go home relatively happy. So to me, it was, again, such a great training ground. And I think also, too, it always astounded me we had local TV, which now, you know, films a lot of the local boards, not only to make them more transparent, but to give people an idea how government works. And when I first ran, I'd have people say, oh, I know you. And I'd think, oh, my goodness. You know,
I saw you on Community Access TV.
Yeah, and I didn't realize how many people. And that's very, you know, enlightening. And also a good sign that people are taking an interest in their government and how it works.
So, Senator Susie, that's the old way of gaining political experience, getting into that talent pipeline. What do you think, though? Again, we've seen just recently in this election that a lot of people don't want traditional politicians. Well, so how do you expand that pipeline?
I do think that the old adage that Tip O'Neill would say, all politics is local, being involved in local, not necessarily an elected position, but in Betty's case, planning board, being involved. I know a lot of young people have a sense of community and want to engage in activities, whether it's a conservation commission or other thing. It doesn't have to be an elected office that someone holds at the local level, but engagement at the local level is how you build a network and how people get to see you outside of being a partisan, being a Democrat or a Republican, and oftentimes how people people rise up through the ranks. We have a lot of amazing local elected officials. Dana Hilliard, who's the mayor of Somersworth, the first openly gay mayor in our state. Steve served as a mayor. Joyce Craig, who in Manchester just was an alderman, ran for mayor this last time, came within 64 votes of beating an incumbent. Lots of great people like that that I think over time you will see aspire to statewide office.
I have to ask you this nationally, and I know we're here in New Hampshire, but nationally, you're seeing this issue as well, you know, at state houses and governor's offices around the country. So I just wonder if that gives you concern about the U.S. House and Senate in the future.
No, I'm not concerned with our ability to recruit great candidates, particularly in the state of New Hampshire. We, I think, more than any other state, and we've certainly proved it this last election, are very open to women being leaders. And unlike in other states, we have broken ground both in our legislative majority. We've had a female governor, United States Senator. So, you know, across the board, I think we as Democrats have been able to recruit excellent candidates because we've focused on people that get involved and engaged, whether it be at the local level or with a particular issue, and just kind of harness that energy and that passion that they show.
Well, and everybody's talked about the great candidates and all these people who almost came close. But Senator Susie, you know, I'm not trying to be mean here, but they didn't come close enough.
That's true.
I mean, you guys lost the governorship, the House and the Senate. and don't control all three for the first time in almost 15 years. For the past 15 years, Democrats have had at least one of those.
That's true, but I think this election was unlike any other. I do think that it is always important to find candidates who very much represent their individual districts. It's a little harder with the way the districts are drawn. But I'm very optimistic. I really believe that there are more people being involved and engaged in the democratic process because of our vibrant primary. You know, with the Republicans having taken the presidency, then we are probably going to start to see candidates that want to run on the Democratic ticket in our presidential race within the next few months. That will start up again. And that always engages different people and gets them involved in the process.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, two quick things. One is being involved in local office, you don't have to be old. You don't have to have lived in your community a super long time. It could be elected. It could be volunteer, as Donna alluded to. You can tell Donald Trump has not held elected office because if you have, you're used to getting hit in the face by 40 to 48% of people. And that's if you're successful. He gets tweets in the air and he goes bananas on Twitter.
Meaning you develop a thick skin.
Yeah, you have to, or you're going to find out it's not for you. But here's the second thing. If you look at 2002, look at 2010 when Democrats had tough nights. We can't wait a couple of years. This is a good – we would all agree on this. At the same time, we develop our bench for tomorrow. We've got a lot of folks that either just won state rep races, Bernie people that stayed involved, or people that said, whoa, now I want to get involved. So we have to begin now moving to 2018 because I'll tell you, 2004 and 2012 were rebound years that were very significant. 2 years earlier, you never would have guessed we would have had as good a night 2 years later as we did. But we have to begin fighting now. Even though we're not all in office, we have to be saying when Chris Sununu is wrong, the state Senate and the state House do something wrong, and we have to provide an alternative, positive vision. And there are a lot of folks with energy on the ground. So we begin to organize them even before the calendar flips to 2017.
Well, here's an email on this talent pipeline question that we're playing around with here. Dan in Dover says, I helped organize on college campuses in New Hampshire for this past year. Dan says young people do not want to vote party lines or against candidates. That is not what they get energized about. Dan says young people are energized by candidates who talk about the issues they care about, i.e., cannabis reform, climate change, income inequality, etc. If the New Hampshire Democratic Party wants a pipeline that will bring in a new wave of young Democratic candidates, they will have to adopt the stances on the issues that matter to us. How will the New Hampshire Democratic Party do this? I'll turn to you real quickly, Gene Martin. Go ahead.
You know, I think that, you know, the New Hampshire Democratic Party is a big tent party. And I think, you know, if you looked at our party platform, I actually had the privilege or disprivilege, if you will, to serve on the platform committee. It's a fun process. We go around to all the different counties.
Wait, did you say disprivilege?
That
wasn't fun?
It can be tough because, you know, you're listening to folks and you're trying to figure out, you know, how to sort of take people who, you know, want cannabis reform, but they want it or they want to keep it the way that it is and try to put that together and sort of, you know, be able to have sort of a consensus of everyone. You know, I think when we look at our candidates and we talk about, you know, I heard some of the middle class issues there, you know, that's what Democrats have really been fighting for, whether it's the minimum wage or the living wage or whether it's paycheck equity or talking about, you know, making sure people are secure in their retirements. I mean, Democrats have really been fighting for these things. And I think, you know, maybe the lesson of this is we need to do a better job at the state level communicating, you know, because I think where young people are, Democrats are, you know, very close to that, if not, you know, spot on. And so I think, you know, for our state level candidates, you know, I think for the voters have to do a little bit of a better job learning about them, but also the candidates have to do a better job educating voters on, you know, where they stand.
Let's take one more call if we could. And Craig is joining us from Keene. Hi, Craig. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sure.
So one of the things that I heard one of your earlier guests speak of earlier was this idea that we need to focus on down-ticket elections or down-ticket candidates, you know, to really have a bottom-up strategy. And one of the things that I noticed in this last election was, although I'm trying to do my due diligence, trying to learn everything I can about a candidate before I go vote for them, a lot of times it's very, very difficult to find information about them. They have a website that's years out of date, or even worse, you know, tells me a little bit about them and their history and has a very beautiful picture of them and their family and their dog, but doesn't really talk about the issues that are important, or may talk about some local issues but ignores some really pressing national issues like women's health care. So it's really hard sometimes to find information about these local candidates if they don't have a good online presence. Mm-hmm. And I'm not on Facebook, and I understand a lot of people get their information that way, but I'm also not likely to go down and buy a newspaper and search through the archives for maybe op-ed pieces that they've written or information about them that way. So it's just getting information about them is a little bit difficult sometimes.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for the call. And Senator Susi, you talked about this earlier. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, his point is well taken. He's not going to go purchase a newspaper. He's not on Facebook, which I find interesting. But I do think that people tend to get their news from what we would consider very non-traditional sources. So for candidates to be out there and to get their message across, they need to be communicating in very different ways. The old days of sending mail pieces, it's one part of a campaign and it certainly appeals to one demographic, but we need to do more in more different ways if we want to reach out to voters like the caller we just had.
Craig, thank you so much for the call. Steve Marchand, real quick, nationally, President Obama, I read over the weekend, is going to work on a new effort post-presidency to look at this GOP advantage in state legislatures, because that's what we've been talking about. What do you think is the right way for him to go around that?
He is the most popular politician in America, and if he wants to leverage that popularity and credibility he has to help improve the process and indirectly help Democrats succeed, can't do better than that.
All right. All of you, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Steve Marchand, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Steve Marchand, former mayor of Portsmouth and a former Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Senator Susi, thank you also for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Donna Susi, Democratic state senator from Manchester. Senator Lasky, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Senator Betty Lasky, Democrat from Nashua, secretary of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And Jean Martin, thank you also. It was nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Jean Martin, treasurer for the New Hampshire Young Democrats. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.